And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme in the second hour is topics that bear scrutiny. Each of my guests is presenting an idea that we need to examine very closely. My first guest has a unique perspective on global competitiveness. He's the head of the Consumer Electronics Association. We discussed his ideas for making America competitive again from his book titled The Comeback. My next guest is a Renaissance man. He's an attorney, a political candidate, a novelist, a nonfiction author, and a provocateur. He's attacked such topics as the Kennedy assassination. He placed George W. Bush on trial for murder. He criticized the O.J. Simpson ruling. We'll discuss his findings as he turns his attention to defending agnosticism in his latest book, The Divinity of Doubt. And as always, if you want to call in and join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Vincent Bugliosi is an attorney and author. He's best known for prosecuting the Charles Manson and the other defendants accused in the Tate LaBianca murders. No less than F. Lee Bailey calls Vincent Bugliosi the quintessential prosecutor. Vincent is a graduate of the University of Miami at Coral Gables, Florida, which he attended on a tennis scholarship. In 1964, he received his law degree from UCLA, where he was the president of his graduating class. Vincent is here today because he's put God on trial in his latest book, Divinity of Doubt, The God Question. Welcome to the show, Vincent. How are you doing today?
On the show, Bill.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you on the show. And I guess I want to start with the very basics. Why did you come to write the book, Divinity of Doubt?
Well, the God question, of course, is something that we're all interested in. And I had read the Bible, of course, and had done a lot of thinking, Bill, about God and religion throughout the years. But I decided to go beyond this, take 2 years out of my life and completely immerse myself in the subject, work 7 days a week, to see if many of these age-old religious beliefs, just because they've been accepted for years doesn't mean that they're accurate, to see if they had any merit to them. And at the risk of sounding presumptuous, what I discovered, Bill, is so startling as a result of my research that if anyone who reads Divinity of Doubt is not stunned, I'd say, Bill, they're probably the type that wouldn't be stunned if they saw a man jump away from his own shadow. Very briefly, Bill, if we have a couple moments, I'll just go over some of the things that I found.
By all means, because they are stunning, and you are a prosecutor, so you love your evidence. Go for it.
Yeah, well, I found that contrary to popular belief, the Bible actually does not support the notion of free will. In fact, astonishingly so, the Bible supports the exact opposite, that there is no free will. It turns out that the immortality of the soul was a pure invention of Plato that Christianity was forced to embrace because without the immortality of the soul, we don't have life after death, and if we don't have life after death, then there's no heaven and hell for Christianity to offer or threaten their millions of followers with. Perhaps the most startling thing that I discovered, Bill, was that I found evidence in the New Testament and the Hebrew Bible that proves, not just beyond a reasonable doubt, but beyond all doubt, that Jesus was not born of a virgin, which means what? By definition, that he was not the Son of God. And if he was not the Son of God, then the Christian doctrine that God had his Son die on the cross for our sins is not actually true, and this, in effect, ravages much of Christianity. Now, I know this sounds hard to believe. It just happens to be the truth, and the consensus, Bill, you know, the book just came out, but there have been early copies out there, is that no one who reads The Divinity of Doubt is going to feel quite the same way ever again about God and religion, and that's the precise reason why I'm sincere when I say that if someone is deeply religious and they have no doubt about God and Jesus, and they get a lot of comfort and strength and solace from their religious beliefs, this is probably not the book for them to read. My daughter said to me, her name is Wendy, said, "Dad, I don't want you to hurt anyone by this book." She's got two very close friends, both very religious. They want to read the book, and she says, "Please don't read this book. You're only going to be hurt." this book is a book for Christians who do have a doubt. Most Christians believe in God, but they have some doubts. It's also a book for agnostics and people who are atheists. But if you're deeply religious, this is probably not a book that you should read. It's a very, very heavy book, and I don't have to tell you, Bill, that what's out there now, this is a 2,000-year-old conversation, and no one has really brought anything heavy, significant to the table for many years, and believe it or not, this book does that. But let's get in some questions, and if you want me to support some of the things that I just said, we can get into more depth. But anything you want to ask, I'll be happy to answer.
All right. Well, we're talking to Vincent Bugliosi, everybody. The book is Divinity of Doubt, The God Question. And you do have some startling revelations, and I wanted to talk about each of them. But I guess I want to go back to your basis for the evidence. You said you've read the Bible. You use that as a source document, both New and Old Testament in the Bible. And my first question to you is, here's the source document where you're basing all of your evidence on. And this is not a factual book. This was not written at the time of the events. In fact, much of it was written hundreds, if not thousands, certainly hundreds of years afterwards.
Absolutely.
And so I'm going to call into question your central theses because they're based on a document that is old, that's probably inaccurate, and certainly has been edited over the time. Over time, the Nicene Council in whatever century it was actually edited out certain gospels of the New Testament. So talk to me, if you will, about using that source document to draw these rather dramatic conclusions.
Well, if you don't use the Bible, then you can't write the book. You follow? I agree with you with what you're saying. But if you say, well, the Bible's just nonsense, then what do you write about? One thing I have to make clear, if someone were to ask me, do you believe in life after death, do you believe in free will, do you believe in the immortality of the soul, virgin birth, I say, why are you asking me? Ask my next-door neighbor. I don't know anything more about that than anyone else does. However, when Christianity places and supports their positions for these things on the Bible, at that point, Bill, I can step in and say, wait a while, folks. The Bible that you're relying on either doesn't support what you're saying or it says the precise opposite of what you're saying. But to say that the Bible is not accurate, that may be true, but then if you start out with that assumption, then you can't even write anything pertaining to the Bible. So we have to assume that the Bible has accuracy at least to the extent that it's been around for centuries and Christianity has relied on it. And the documents that were found in 1947, in the Far East, you're aware that other than the Book of Esther, all of these old Testament Bibles are very, 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 very similar to the modern Bibles. Now there have been changes made throughout the years, different editors and things like that, but the essence in the Dead Sea Scrolls that you know about, 1947, very, very clear that there is a strong resemblance between these old copies of the Bible and what we're talking about today. But, Bill, to throw out the Bible, then how do we have a discussion? And I'm not the one that's relying on the Bible. Christianity is. And if Christianity relies on the Bible and I say, wait a while, the Bible doesn't say what you say it does, then I think we're making some progress.
Fair enough. We're talking to Vincent Bugliosi, everybody. And Vincent, in your book, you say that you're an agnostic. So why did you become an agnostic?
Well, it's probably because of my orientation. Evidence leads me to everything. Evidence is my master. And that's why when people read the book, I think they're going to be surprised in certain areas like first cause and evolution, I go in the direction of a God. In other areas like intelligent design, I go away from it. But theists believe in a God. Atheists don't. The agnostic says, I don't know. And, Bill, I happen to have a rather bright guy on my side here. His name is Einstein. Einstein was an agnostic. Actually, interestingly enough, Darwin was also an agnostic. Now, I say interestingly enough because most evolutionists are atheists, and yet the founder of evolution, Darwin, was an agnostic. I'm an agnostic, Bill, because I feel that the question of whether or not God exists is an impenetrable mystery. It's beyond human comprehension. Talking about Einstein again, Einstein said that the problem is just too vast for our limited minds, and I believe that in recognizing the limits of what we know, The most sensible and responsible position on the eternal question of God is to be an agnostic. I love Gertrude Stein's quote. She said, there ain't no answer, there ain't going to be any answer, there never has been an answer, that's the answer. But I do base everything that I say on the evidence. What's the evidence here? Well, you got to look at the Bible. How good that evidence is, I don't know. But it's certainly better than if you didn't have a Bible and people were just talking off the top of their head. But I base everything on the evidence, and I think I have a certain amount of credibility in that area. Just last month, at the invitation of the Pentagon, I spoke, I lectured for 3 hours to a conference of Marine prosecutors down at Camp Pendleton. And I can tell you that beyond all doubt, if we look at the Bible, if we don't look at the Bible, then what are we going to look at? If you look at the Bible, the evidence shows that Jesus was not born of a virgin.
Now that I want to come back to in just a minute, and we will explore that, and also I want to return to Darwin. But before we do, Vincent, I want to ask you a different type of question. Now, okay. As an agnostic, what do you feel is the strongest argument then for the existence of God? Because you got to play both sides of the fence as an agnostic.
Yeah, right. By the way, I reject atheism because it's basically just a litany of one non sequitur after another. I'm talking about the Christopher Hitchens of the world and Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins. Mm-hmm. I think it's an intellectually empty philosophy. The strongest argument for God, I would say, would be first cause. Because it starts out with a premise that no one can really dispute, and that premise is that every effect, by effect, I mean everything in existence, every effect has to have had a cause, was caused by something, which in turn was caused by something else. However, this regression in the chain of causation that goes backwards, at least logically, and maybe it's not logical, but this regression cannot go back into infinity. It cannot go back without end. It goes back to a point, it goes back to something which, it turns out, did not have a cause. St. Thomas Aquinas referred to as that an uncaused cause, something that's independent that was not caused by anything else. And when you do that, then the question is this first cause, who put that first cause there? And, of course, Catholicism and Christianity have a good point. That first cause most likely was a supernatural being, and they call that supernatural being God. Now, scientists, they try to get around that. And their biggest argument, as you know, Bill, you know this, it's the Big Bang.
Right.
And they claim that at some point, about 13.7 billion years ago, the universe exploded into existence in a zillionth of a second from some subatomic particle or trace of energy. And I went to Caltech, looked at the books on Big Bang. Impossible to understand. Just one mathematical quotation or a citation after another. But I wasn't looking for that because I knew I couldn't understand it. What I was looking for is what was this something? What was this something that exploded into the universe, causing the universe, causing hundreds of billions of stars? And I found things like a trace of energy, a particle, mathematical points, a dust of mathematical points, all types of stuff like this. But the question is, and the Big Bang people do not address themselves to this question, and it's a question that has to be asked. Who, no matter how small that subatomic particle or trace of energy or mathematical point was, who put that something there? And before the Big Bang, unless the Big Bang can come up with a satisfactory answer to that question, who put that something, no matter how small it is there, I think we have to retreat again into agnosticism or perhaps into theism that there was a God. But all they talk about is the explosion into the universe, but they don't say who put that first trace of energy or small particle there.
That is a good point. We're talking to Vincent Bugliosi, everybody, author of the book Divinity of Doubt, The God Question. Obviously, many of you remember him as the prosecutor in the Charles Manson trials as well. Vincent, well, there's more to explore than we have time for. So I'm going to ask you a question and ask you to really think deeply about this. What did you get personally out of writing the book The Divinity of Doubt?
Well, I knew it was going to be a powerful book because I knew I had a lot of things to say, but I got so deeply into it, getting books from all over the country, that what really shocked me was coming up with these things like on free will and the virgin birth that literally shake the foundations of Christianity. I did not know I was going to come up with stuff like that. We're talking about heavy stuff here. We're not talking about the Da Vinci Code, where Jesus marries Mary Magdalene and has children. The number one book in the country now is 3-year-old boy. The father's writing about it. It has an appendectomy operation, and during the surgery he meets Jesus and his older sister and John the Baptist. We're not talking about lighthearted fare like that. So I think the thing that shocked me the most and I learned the most was these things that, if true, literally shake the very foundations of Christianity.
And it is a thought-provoking book. We've been talking to Vincent Bugliosi, author of the book Divinity of Doubt, The God Question. Vincent, if people are intrigued by what they hear, they want to learn more, or perhaps even throw stones at you, where would you direct them to go on the Internet to learn more about your book?
Well, I guess there's a website out there. I'm still in the 19th century, Bill, working with a yellow patent pencil. I don't even have a cell phone. But I imagine the publisher has a website out there. The book just came out yesterday. It's available everywhere. Unbelievably, I don't know how they can sell so cheap on Amazon.com. I'm told it sells for $15, but it's already started selling very, very well, very provocative. There are sections on death and dying that some people can't even get through the chapter because it's so hard-hitting. There's all types of questions about prayer, the uselessness of prayer. You know, Bill, when someone prays, okay, and they say, God answered my prayers, I don't think they're really thinking, because if God answered their prayers, what are they saying? They're saying that he had the power to answer prayer. And if he had the power to answer prayer, and yet we know that he turns down nearly always those who need his help the most. I'm talking about the 6 million people who died in the Holocaust. I'm talking about the 25 million people who died from AIDS. In the Holocaust, probably the last word on their lips was the word God. If he's turned down all those people, how can he be good if he has the power to prevent all the atrocities and all the horrors in the world and basically says, take a walk, get lost? Now, if he doesn't have that power, then that means that if you happen to get what you prayed for, it has nothing to do with God. We've been praying for peace for centuries,
for millennia,
trillions of prayers for peace. And when are people going to finally realize that either there's no one up there listening to them, or if he's listening to them, he doesn't have the power to stop the violence, or if he does, he has no desire to do so. And yet people continue to pray.
Well, it is thought-provoking, and we'll have to explore that later. We've been talking to Vincent Bugliosi, everybody, author of the book, The Divinity of Doubt, The God Question. Vincent, it has been a real privilege. Thank you so much for being my guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a million, Bill, for having me on the show.
You betcha.